We're back with more of Lake Effect. I'm Bonnie North. Thanks for joining us. While this next interview isn't specifically about Valentine's Day, it's not hard to make the case that it's relevant ahead of the holiday. While some will celebrate with chocolate and flowers, others might be more tempted to bring a blush to their Valentine's cheek with wine. Lake Effect's wine contributor Ray Pfister joins Stephanie Lecce to offer some tips on planning a wine tasting in the comfort of your own home.
Really, that's what it is all about. It's planning how you're going to go about it. First of all, what is the point of the tasting? Are you trying to introduce people to new wines? Are you trying to educate them a little bit? Are you trying to just broaden their horizons? Or are you just simply doing it to have some fun? I've always followed a fairly simple pattern of doing blind tastings, which can be a lot of fun because it can become a bit of a competition. And everybody's always curious, this could be one thing. This could be another. Did a tasting recently where one of the women there had just been to a tasting that was all about the stemware. And it was fun to bounce things off her because she had a lot of information that was fresh. So planning is the big part. What are you going to do? Reds, whites, sparkling, that kind of thing. And then you go from there.
Now, I've been to professional wine tasting events, charity wine tasting events. What's the difference between those kinds of tastings and one that you would do in your home with good friends and loved ones?
Well, generally, those tastings are not blind. You can see exactly what you're tasting. You'll get the information from the person who's pouring. More often than not, they're distributors. Sometimes they're people from the wineries. And they're going to give you the information about what they taste in it, what they think you should taste in it. It's a lot of fun because it's a great way to educate yourself about wine because you can see it, feel it, and touch it. But I find the idea of doing blind tastings fun because they're challenging. I did one in my house years ago where one of my favorite wines was – I rated it 8 out of 10 and didn't even know it. So you learn a little bit about yourself.
If you want to do a blind tasting, how do you pick yourself? So that way maybe you're not getting an advantage over your guests.
You know, it's funny. It helps to have a little bit of short-term memory loss. When I bag the wine, I always try to get bags from the grocery store, nice, slim, typical liquor bags that are small, that aren't too cumbersome. And I'll mark them down as I go, and I'll hide the list. And honestly, I don't remember. The only tip for me is occasionally I might recognize the top of a bottle. Certain wineries use certain types of bottles I might pick out. But I really try to make them nice and tight to the top so people can't really cheat. And people don't want to cheat. They want to learn. So again, make it reds, make it whites. I like doing reds because they're a little more complex and certainly a little harder maybe to figure out. I'll number them. I'll have, of course, a master list off to the side. I'll supply the guests with, of course, the names of the wines that are in the bottles. And at the end of the evening, I'll have them guess which was which, either by varietal or by label. And I'll have them sort of give me their, not their homework, if you will, but sort of a little ballot telling me which is which. And the results are sort of funny. It's hard. It's very hard. Unless you're a regular wine taster, it's very hard to pick things out. Varietals are a little easier, but to try and match it to the label, and I think most of the time is because you're comparing one wine to the other as opposed to having wine all by itself.
Now, obviously, the wine and the wine glasses are crucial pieces of equipment to have for your wine tasting. But what other items should you have available for your guests as you're putting this tasting on?
Some of the needed tools are you have to have water. You have to have either spit cups, which I recommend, kind of like those classic red or blue beer cups because they're a little more private, if you will. You can have a bucket, but some people who don't go to regular tastings aren't comfortable with the idea of spitting into a bucket, so they may end up drinking more than they want to. You don't want to have people leave a nice tasting drunk. It's dangerous and it's a bad idea. So if they spit, they're a little more comfortable. You should always have some kind of markers for the glasses. You can get the classic wine charms. I find these little, they look like flat donuts. They're just little pieces of paper that go on the bottom of your wine glass. They hook onto it where you can write your name on them. The whole idea of putting down your glass and having to pick up the wrong glass, nobody likes to do that. With a wine charm, I never remember what I had. Was it the little Monopoly figure? Was it the grapes? I don't know. So you have to have that. And again, fresh water so everybody can drink from it. And then, of course, it's nice to do it with cheeses, with crackers, something to clear your palate. And I also like to start it off with something different. If I'm doing reds, I'll start the evening off with a bottle of either champagne or sparkling wine or maybe a rosé, something like that, just to be completely neutral. They'll see what it is. And it just kind of gets the conversation going.
As the person putting on this wine tasting, how do you determine which wines you're going to include in the first place?
Well, number one concern is always budget. Do do you want to get into something where you're putting $50 bottles of wine up there and something like that could get expensive if you're opening between 8 and 10 wines. You know, you can stay around the $10, $15 slot quite easily because there's plenty of great Argentinian, Chilean, Australian wines and certainly great Italians as well that you could do at that price range. But sometimes you maybe want to start at, say, a $5, a $10, a $15, $20 and just have it be progressive. So at the end of the night, there's always that price doesn't necessarily always equate to the quality or to what you're drinking and how that fits your own taste buds. But price is the first thing, and then if there's maybe a particular label or a varietal, we'll do all Cabernets or all Zinfandels and just, again, keep it to what I think I can afford budget-wise. Sometimes I'll suggest to people you just go ahead and invite your guests to bring their own bottle and then bag it then and see if they can find out if they know their wine well enough, what they brought, if they can pick it out.
Now, depending on what wines you've chosen, whether you're going by label or varietal, are you trying to have your guests determine which wine this is or to rate them?
I think I'm more wanting to turn them on to something new. For me, when I do my own personally, I always put in wines I've never tried to test my own palate and then some favorites, if you will, some ringers in there for people to make their notes. You know, they'll give them a sheet of paper so they can write stuff down. And at the end of the evening go, oh, I had ABC and that came out number one for me. That's great. I'd like to find that. Where did you get it? Not in the interest of promoting any particular wine store, but just saying, this is a great wine. What do you think? But of course, what you think is great wine, I may not agree with.
Now, if the host wants to make sure that they're including a couple of wines that they've never tried themselves before, where can they go to find some suggestions?
Well, number one, your local wine store. There's plenty of great wine stores here in the Milwaukee area. And these people who work at these stores, most of them, they're not working there for the buck. They're working because they like being around the wine. And they'll always make great suggestions. I've had so many great experiences at wine stores. And then you all of a sudden get into gabbing with these people as wine freaks. But on our newsletter, I do a section we started about 4 or 5 months ago called Ray's Picks, which are my personal preferences. And they vary in price. They're just wines I want to turn people onto. I don't rate them. I don't even put in any notes about what you're going to taste, what they're like. I just want people to be aware of them. These are ones I think are great.
You mentioned before that you want to make sure that your guests are having a good time talking about the wine, debating with each other. What are your suggestions for dealing with guests who maybe are a little shy around wine, don't know that much about it? What are some ways that the host can help them feel more comfortable in this tasting and make sure that the event isn't so stuffy they feel intimidated?
And it should never be stuffy. We were talking before the show. I just did one recently with a room full of people who 80% of the people I didn't know. So one is being assertive and meeting everybody. You're not going to remember everybody's names, but you just try. And have conversations with the people you don't know. You've already talked to the people in the room you know. You're just starting fresh with these. One woman I mentioned a minute ago had done a varietal tasting for glassware, for stemware, and that gave us an immediate area to talk about what she tasted, how she tasted, what they gave her. You really have to be one-on-one with people. You need to take the time to bring some people out of their shell. You can tell the beer drinkers in the room who are kind of like, well, I'm coming because of my wife or because of my husband. And once you start talking with them and you start pointing out the differences, they go, yeah, you know, it's all maybe a little more hospitality than average. And again, that's the social part of wine.
So if you want to host a wine tasting at your home with, you know, some of your good friends, do you yourself have to be so knowledgeable then to be able to lead people through the tasting properly?
Not at all. Many, many years ago, I had, strictly because of the job I had, it was about 30-some years ago, I had sort of an accidental wine cellar because I was a waiter at a restaurant and we used to get wine bottles for good sales. And I was married at the time, and I had all this wine, and we decided we'd do a tasting just to get rid of it. And we just all talked about what we were tasting. And that was, again, that was sort of the start of my wine education, where all of a sudden your taste is going like, wow, I like this. I've never tried a Beignet before. I've never tried this before. So you don't have to be knowledgeable. You just got to know what you like.
Well, it sounds like to me we're going to have a lot of local home wine tasting events going on pretty soon after people listen to this. But I want to ask, what about the big event coming up in Napa?
Well, one of the two big events, of course, there seems like there's always something going on out there. Premier Napa Valley is coming up at the end of the month. and actually more like around the 20th, 21st. And this is an event for the trade only. So it'd be distributors, retailers, media, which is the category I fall into. And these distributors and retailers can bid on wines that are made for the event. And it gets fairly pricey. That's not the kind of stuff I'd be able to bid on. And in the end, the money that comes from that event funds Auction Napa Valley, which is in June.
Well, we've had you in the last couple of years after you've attended Premier, and you've always brought back some really interesting factoids and information, knowledge on new trends in wine, and even some clips from interviews you get to do with winemakers.
I learn a lot every time. One thing I preface, especially when I do tastings, I am no wine expert. I'm an enthusiast. I'm uncomfortable with the term expert. I just love it. But I go to these events and I learn every time. And especially now going out to Napa, California, I'm sure a lot of people have read, has been in a drought, a horrible drought for 3 years. And this is not good for the valley, in Napa Valley especially, because there is a certain amount of rain the vines need. Well, I was looking at my iPhone the other day for the forecast, and all next week is nothing but rain. So I think things are finally starting to ease up a little bit. I've heard some of the winemakers pruning in the rain, and we're happy to be doing it.
Well, Ray, I look forward to having you back in when you get back from Napa and telling us about what you learned.
Great. Thanks, Stephanie.
Our wine contributor Ray Pfister runs the wine blog and podcast Life Between the Vines. He also owns Fifth Floor Recording in Milwaukee's Third Ward, and he spoke with Stephanie Lecce.